being in Akihabara and seeing it like go back to the otaku, for the otaku, by the otaku, kind of made me think about this word otaku and like what it means and what it's become. And I saw you tweeted or retweeted a thing from Battling Noah Smith, like a statistic that said over half of Americans are no longer like looking for love in all the wrong places. Or like,
yeah, they're not. Not only are they not dating, they're not looking to date. You know, which is exactly the statistic that a lot of Western media around the turn of the millennium made fun of Japanese for. Oh, look, Japanese guys, they're all herbivorous, you know, and you know, to their credit, like, you know, Japanese media was saying much the same thing. But yeah, it's like whatever happens, like all of these like kind of weird Japan trends that the media latches onto end up being ours. You know, and that was basically the entire plot line of my book, Pure Invention. But like every single day, it seems like I turn on the internet and there's some new report that basically proves that thesis. And this is just the most recent.
And then people like what, leave the comment turning Japanese ? I don't know.
You know, that's the thing, right? It's like I think the new hurdle to becoming a Japanologist isn't like a PhD. It's whether you can talk intelligently about Japan without making a vapor's reference.
What about Lost in Translation? Matt, this is like something out of Lost in Translation.
It's like Tokyo's like Blade Runner.
A geisha with a cell phone.
Exactly.
Stop the press.
So, you know, it's funny because the word otaku means your home. It's like a form of address that was basically used by what? Little old ladies and like housewives and stuff until this new demographic of grown ass men and women who were obsessed with kids entertainment started using it as a kind of linguistic social distancing tool in the late 70s and early 80s, right?
Yeah.
And that, like, you know, it basically, for those Japanese students out there, replaced like boku or, you know, excuse me, it replaced like anata. And you would call somebody otaku because it makes them even more of a distance between you and the person you're speaking to. But that, you know, that was so weird to hear. It's like the equivalent of like hearing teenagers using like thee and thou and like biblical, you know, style, like King James style English in their daily discourse. So I guess it's basically like homeboy or homegirl, you know what I mean? Like homie, but except it doesn't have any of the street connotations that does in English, because it literally means your home. And I think because the image was that so many of these people spent so much time at in their homes, that it kind of fit, and that became the descriptor as well as their preferred, you know.
So when the Japanese media, or when like pundits began kind of writing about them, it was immediately like making fun of them.
Yes.
It was immediately like pointing at them and saying, look at these fucking weirdos.
Yes. There's always seems to be a kind of like judgmental aspect to it. Like, you know, oh, these guys are they're consumers, but they're consuming the wrong thing. Like, you know, and they're dressing the wrong way and their interests are the wrong interests. Even among like, you know, from that very first moment when Nakamori Akio first coined otaku as the description of these people instead of just being a, you know, a
human beings.
Exactly. What was he spent like his entire essay like ripping on the way they dressed and like their weight problems, whether they're too thin or too fat or whether they're like, you know, pimply. And I was like, damn, wow. But like it really resonated. And so like one of the really interesting things you see is that as the otaku themselves like enthusiastically embrace this new term, even though it's like kind of a diss, their own writing about themselves is equally judgmental and equally kind of nasty in a lot of ways, right? It's like I think like kind of a little bit of masochism and a little bit of like guilt are
well, there's like Otaku no Video, right, which is kind of just like the wacky sitcom, like the first version of that. I was trying to identify like different stages that like otaku culture has gone through, and I think like the connecting thread through all of it is like social awkwardness. Like, that's always something on both sides. Like, the outsiders see it as socially awkward, and people on the inside see themselves as socially awkward. And I think, I don't know how this has changed, but the also connecting thread is, like, people who like childish things past childhood.
Yeah, it's like a kind of an obsession, I guess, is also key to it. Because you have to be kind of obsessed to be, like, you know, going out and collecting every, you know, aspect of your favorite show. Or back like in, you know, in the Yamato days, when I think the kind of proto otaku, you know, being the, you know, adults who wouldn't stop watching the show that was ostensibly made for kids, Space Cruiser Yamato, would like go to the animation studios and beg them for cells and stuff like that. Or like any kind of materials used in making the productions. And like, so you have to have this kind of obsessive curatorial, like you're curating it. You're curating your collection. and like your collection kind of becomes your identity, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I mean, that first generation of otaku, maybe it's not so much true or wasn't, but my sense is like someone who is fixated on one thing, like I am the Gundam guy, right. I am the Yamato guy. We can all be in the same space, but like you're kind of a specialist in something that's useless. Well,
in the past, I think you had more of that, right? Like where you had like Otaku no Video is all about bringing these different quote unquote specialists together to make a company. Oh, he's the gun otaku. You know, this guy is the, you know, American horror movie otaku. You know, and I think you see like people like Toshio Okada, the Ota King, who not coincidentally directed Otaku no Video and wrote Otaku no Video, has been like gone on record as saying like, oh, well, modern day otaku are dead. Modern day otaku don't specialize like we used to, you know, that kind of thing. And it's so I think that is a key aspect of, you know what, you know, conspicuous consumption has been a thing forever. Paging David Marks. Conspicuous consumption has been a thing forever. And otaku were like conspicuous consumers of stuff that got them absolutely no status in society. I think that's what freaked out like mainstream society. It's like these guys are just as obsessed with the things they watch and the things they collect and the things they wear as we are, but like we don't understand it. Like it doesn't, you know, it didn't move them ahead. If anything, it moved them back in society. So they're kind of like the antimatter to the matter of conspicuous consumption. You know, it's like, you're doing it wrong, otaku, was what the authorities, how they saw it.
I mean, I've been looking at like my old blog entries because I'm putting together my new book, and like 20 years ago, 15, 20 years ago, there were a lot of books like Otaku is Dead, hating. There were a lot of people saying otaku culture was dead. And I think that kind of reflected like a transition from the specialist to like what we call light users, which are people who just get into the new shows every season. They're like, you're still a fan of anime or manga, but you're kind of a dilettante. You'll just get into whatever's kind of offered up to you by the otaku market.
It's the mainstreaming. It's the mainstreaming of it. And like if you think about what time frame that was when the Evangelion movies were coming out, and also when Train Man Densha Otoko hit really big. And those were like kind of the first Evangelion, and then especially with Train Man, that was like kind of the onboarding and mainstreaming of these kind of, you know, otaku into society at large. And suddenly it's like, oh, it's okay to read manga, it's okay to watch anime.
Police in Tokyo say at least 7 people are dead and 10 are injured following a stabbing rampage in a popular electronics district. Police say a man rammed a truck into a crowd of shoppers. They say he jumped out of the rented truck, began stabbing people that he'd knocked down, then turned his attention to the horrified bystanders. 17 people were stabbed in just 3 minutes. One witness says he saw the man and thought he was just pushing people as he ran. Witnesses say he screamed as he attacked people. Police arrested 25-year-old Tomohiro Kato, who had blood on his face. A witness says he dropped the knife when police pointed a gun at him. Officials say Kato told police that he was tired of life and sick of everything. They say he told investigators that he intended to kill people. The attack happened at lunchtime in a crowded district where electronics and games are sold. It also fell on the 7th anniversary of another mass stabbing. At least 17 ambulances rushed to the scene to tend to the victims. Once rare, stabbing attacks have become more frequent in Japan in recent years as violent crime has increased. Matt Friedman, The Associated Press.
And there was also Truck Man. There was the guy who drove the truck into the crowd in Akihabara and like went on a killing spree. That all happened around the same time.
Yeah. I guess he's kind of the equivalent like of the guy who burned down the, you know, Kyoto Animation Studio. Although it's like the animation studio attack is much more of one of those fragile male type things. Like he basically killed like a huge number of young female, like really talented women in the industry, all in like one fell swoop. And it's just, there's always this kind of a toxic fandom aspect of things. I don't know that really, you know, are those people otaku? You know, this is always the question whenever some kind of criminal happens, going all the way back to Miyazaki Tsutomu in 1989 when he was arrested for like, what was it, like pedophilia and like murder and stuff like that. And he was kind of framed as this otaku, but then when you talk to otaku, there's like both this, God, is he one of us? And then also people saying, yeah, bullshit, this guy wasn't really an otaku, he was just taping stuff off TV. We'd never just tape stuff off TV. We'd tape it off other tapes or something. You know what I mean?
Blame the VCRs, Matt. The VCRs made it.
It is. It's like how the Polaroid camera made porn a thing.
Okay, so with otaku culture, like, it seems like it really, you know, begins as kind of like an underground sort of thing and gets into the media gradually. But then like the lost decade happens.
Yeah.
And then like you begin to see these like greater societal effects, like hikikikomori, like people who don't leave their homes. Like And I guess a lot of people are drawing parallels to like what's going on globally, right? With the whole economy in the toilet and more people just sort of like spending all day with their lives completely like mediated by screens and like media.
Well, yeah, I mean, the otaku were kind of the masters of social distancing even before that became a thing, right? It's like, you know, the irony is that in the early days of being an otaku, you actually had to go out to physical events and stuff like that. But like, other than those times, you basically were in your pod with your own like posse, and like you didn't really have a lot of interaction with the world at large. So like, they're kind of trailblazers from that aspect. But you know, it's like you're saying, right, when the bubble burst in 1989 or 1990 and then Japan's like economy went in its horrendous tailspin, like normal people stopped buying stuff. Like the otaku were like the last consumers standing, because they didn't alter their consumption patterns at all. If anything, they started buying even more. And like by doing that they unwittingly shifted the entire Japanese economy to like this otaku mode. You know, where like, you know, software became the thing instead of the hardware of the bubble era and the kind of high growth era.
I mean, you could draw a lot of parallels, and I think people are, that like maybe Japan went through what kind of other, you know, nations are going through now or will go through shortly. I think the other big movement, like after around the Train Man era, like 15 years ago, were like the emergence of guys who preferred 2D women over 3D pigs. Am I using that terminology correctly?
Like there's a Variety like magazine review of Osamu Tezuka's movie Cleopatra, Queen of Sex, and the reviewer, this is like 1970, what year was that? It was the same year as Fritz the Cat.
It's like 71 or 72. 70,
and the guy's like, there's no like planet where adult men will ever like prefer the cartoon breasts over the real thing. Like, you know, end of story, you know, done.
Hold my beer.
And then like what happens? Like Pornhub, starting a couple years ago, started announcing what its like top searches were. And like hentai keeps coming in like in the top. It's like always dueling with number one or number two for like the top slots of like porn consumption in the States. And like, even though like the 2D things being consumed are different, you know, it's the same basic thing, you know, like animated porn. I guess furries are kind of like in that same headspace too.
Fantasy delivery devices.
Yeah, exactly.
Of endorphins. So, I mean, I guess like the high level sociological reading of this is like, these were like guys who like had no social status, could not get a job because the economy was bad, could not get a mate. So what they did is they sort of said, well, I don't want a real woman anyway, you know, kick the can down the railroad tracks.
Yeah, they're kind of, they're giving up, but they're not, maids. They're giving up on like mainstream society, but they're not giving up on their interests, which I think is key, you know? And that's why like the otaku are always portrayed as being kind of gloomy. And in fact, like one of the original terms for them is Nekurazoku, which is like the gloomy tribe. Because they didn't like really fit in their classes. Like they're always the ones kind of in the corner reading manga at recess instead of playing kickball.
Antisocial in a society. I mean, even in my daughter's daycare, they have two rooms. One room is where the kids run around with like, they play tag and like they throw balls back and forth. And like, you know, they're basically outgoing and yelling at each other. And like the second floor is like the room where kids read and draw, and it's quiet up there. It's like all the introverts hide up there and all the extroverts.
Well, it's nice to give them an opportunity. You know, it's like, I would have wanted that, like a kids get in the manga room, you know, like just watch your anime. Speaking as one of the kids who was always like forced to like play stickball or whatever the hell we were playing back, like before Nintendo was invented, you know, in kindergarten and elementary school.
Dodgeball? Yes. Are you the reigning dodgeball?
Exactly, that kind of stuff. You know, I would have loved to have a room where I can just like, I don't know, cut out cardboard and make like Gundam out of it or whatever, you know, whatever hell else I was doing and being teased for heavily back in elementary school. So it's you know, yeah, there's that outsider thing and like, but you know, I think key to it is like they're outsiders who kind of forged a new lifestyle for themselves. Like they're not just society. They're always portrayed. Otaku are always portrayed as societal dropouts, but they're not. They're like, they're making their own society, whether they'll admit it or not. Right?
Sure. Well, Akihabara, right? Wasn't that kind of the otaku kingdom? That was the otaku bedroom writ large.
And Kichijoji. Kichijoji and Akihabara were the big, I think. Kichijoji was where all the anime was made back in like the 70s and 80s. And then like that's kind of, you know, that when all of those animation studios moved out to other cheaper places, like Nagano kind of, I think, rose to take over that. But Nagano is more of like kind of a nostalgic place. It's not like an active, like actual otaku culture is being made here. It's like, you know, if you need a Bulmark Godzilla figure you know it's there, you can go get it there, you know what I mean? That kind of thing.
Sure. So I see, like, there's almost like a third wave after 2005, which is like kind of the hating the otaku wave era, which is weebs, which is people around the world suddenly saying, I'm an otaku.
Right.
And then like Otaku USA magazine comes out and completely changes the paradigm. No, but
who's
you have
the
like
editor of that?
But you had foreigners saying, I'm an otaku. And what they mean is, I'm a fan of Japan. I'm a fan of anime and manga and Japan. Like, I want to speak Japanese. I want a Japanese girlfriend. I'm going to, you know, that whole thing kind of begins to really emerge.
Yes. Well, you know, there's always going to be that aspect of like, I was into it before. It was cool, man. You know, like that kind of thing. And like, it's easy to forget now how weird it was seeing, like, you know, turning on TV and what was that, like 2005, and seeing Twilight, like this total parody of the Gainax intro being on the intro for like the top
the Train Man drama TV series, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, of 2005. It was just really, really jarring and weird because this culture had been in the shadows for so, so long. And now suddenly was just being wholeheartedly embraced by the mainstream. But you know what else is key to this that we can't forget is what happened in between 2005 and like the 1980s is Nee Channel. You know, like the rise of these, and the internet, and like Japan was, everybody like kind of looks at Japan as being behind the curve a little bit when it comes to, you know, network technology and the internet now, but like they were way ahead of it in the late 90s. Like Japan had the first like really viable mobile internet service, like iMode. You know, that's where like emoji and like all sorts of our modern internet culture come from. And then in 1999, Nee Channel came out, right? Which is like the first, it's the progenitor of like all of the Chans and Kuns to come, you know, 4chan and 8chan and 8kun and God knows what else.
So you had basically Japanese people able to anonymously communicate with other people, and like a darkness on the edge of town sort of begins to appear.
Yeah, well, it's like, you know, it's like the id of the internet, basically, like Nee Channel, and then later 4chan, like they started as basically otaku gathering grounds. 4chan was famously made as a place to kind of talk about anime. That was its entire raison d'etre in its earliest years. And then as these kind of outsider people realized that they could talk about anything, it started mutating into these like weirder, like kind of pushback on mainstream society, and let's do these like, you know, demonstration kind of things, and like, you know, actions, you know, that's where like Anonymous comes from and all of that. So that whole like kind of the really like that's the really the X factor in all of this, the internet. You know, I don't know that, you know, we wouldn't be here where we are without the internet having taken over all aspects of our lives, but it's also kind of, that's the big reason I think why we've all otaku-ized, so to speak, you know?
I mean, I think, like, the mainstream Japanese entertainment industry loves anime and manga. It's like an $18 billion right. annual industry, right? But it's kind of uncontainable because it's sort of like the consumers... You see this a lot in America now, right? It's like the consumers can turn on you. The consumers can make porn parodies of your shit. The consumers can completely culture jam the fuck out of whatever the mainstream is selling to them.
Well, it's tough, I think, when your product is actually the identity of the people who are consuming it in a big way. Like, you know, anime is mainly, it's like a medium, and manga too. It's like they're mediums of adolescent angst. You know, like they're really, that they really hit that sweet spot of like, you know, you're kind of alone in the world against the grown-ups or against forces beyond your control or whatever, and like, you know, hungry for adventure and all sorts of other things. And like, you know, this anime being an identity for people means that they don't have a lot of, you know, the consumers often feel like they know it better than the people who make it themselves.
You know, they like, identify with it too much.
Yeah, well, whether it's too much or not is like that's a subjective thing, but it's like, it's just a fact, you know, which is why you get these, you know, people who don't speak Japanese screaming at translators for translating things wrong or things like that. You know, it's because they've incorporated the things they consume literally into their identities, which is something that's been happening since way back, you know, when otaku was first a word in the early 80s.
Is this why John Boyega called me a toxic Star Wars fan on Twitter the other day?
Are you? Yes, you're is toxic fandom, Patrick. Did you start that?
Yeah, otaku is an interesting word because it means something different to everyone. I mean, after, you know, in the 80s in Japan, it was such a dangerous thing because of the otaku killer. And but to me, as an American, otaku, it doesn't mean just fan. It means anime fan. I know that in Japan, if I say I'm an otaku, they could say, of what?
So I'm kind of looking at the present now, and it's sort of like, well, the whole, I guess, we're in the era of like everyone is an otaku, right? You see grandmas and grannies, you know, with the local Shoten guy wearing a shirt that says Marvel on him, or Star Wars, or... You know, Demon Slayer is like fucking everywhere right now.
Yeah, Demon Slayer is everywhere. You know, my niece is into it, and so I sat down and watched a little bit of it. And it's, you know, it's a well done show. It's not, I think, the kind. I always wonder, is this the kind of thing I would have watched when I was a kid, or do I just not find it that interesting now because I've outgrown this? You know, that it,
yeah,
I
you guess already had that slot in your brain is filled with exactly all kinds of junk already.
I mean, I feel the same way about the new Star Wars movies, so maybe it's just maybe I'm a grown up now, Patrick. Maybe
I mean, I felt that way about The Wiz when that came out in 1978.
Heartbeeps really was the moment, I think.
You'd already had Holmes and Yo-Yo. You're like, I really don't need wacky robot comedy.
I was like, I've already graduated to Knight Rider, like adult entertainment, like Knight Rider and the A-Team by that point.
Okay, so you can talk to the most boring person in America and they know who Iron Man is. They know who Loki is. Like, yeah. Everyone's an otaku now, right? There's kind of this, like, geek culture became well, pop culture.
It's, you know, it's not even geek culture. It is. You're absolutely right. But I think it's actually like this kid culture has become grown-up culture. You know, it's because it's not just Marvel movies. It's like, remember there was like that fad for cupcakes, and now there's this fad for like adult coloring books, you know, and these like, there's all sorts of these like weird, the British call it like kidulting, kidult fads, like where you're basically in touch with your inner child. Like it used to be like, oh, you know, I'm going to get a train set for little Timmy because I remember playing with trains when I was a kid, but then you just kind of let the kid do what he wanted with it. And now it's like, you know, the adults are like watching, you know, Kamen Rider with their kids and even more into it than the kids are. Kids are like, damn, I want to go play Pokemon with my friends, but you know, dad's making me watch Kamen Rider again. Is this sounding familiar in your house, Patrick?
She's not really big on tokusatsu. She can play the Godzilla theme on the piano, but she watches YouTube. She watches like Minecraft game streamers, and I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, we have the Toei channel. We can watch Kyodyne. We can watch Star Wolf. Like, what are you doing?
The entire idea of like a... That's another thing about otaku, right? They were all about like tearing down the wall between creator and consumer and like kind of, you know, tearing down the gatekeepers and things like that. Like, and now we live in an era where kids are way more into YouTube or watching like Instagram reels or whatever, TikTok videos, than they are into like carefully produced and curated, you know, entertainment, right? Carefully produced like Kyodyne. Carefully curated like Star Wolf. But no, it's true. Like, and that's another like kind of otakuization of the world, you know? It's because I think YouTube is basically the doujinshi of modern, you know, internet culture. You make it yourself, you know, you're reacting to other stuff, you're pastiching, you're parodying other stuff. So yeah, it's, you know, it's again, this is another example of one of these things where Japan didn't like create this. Japan was just the first to get to this point in its society, and that's why the West is starting to kind of resemble it so much, because we're in that same kind of place that the otaku were and that young people were in the lost decades.
So if we follow this line into madness, what would be the next step for the future?
Train Man 2? What is America's Train Man? That's what you're... I know, actually, America's Train Man is basically the Marvel cinematic universe, I think. That was like...
What does that even mean?
Well, what that means is, like, the Marvel movies, I think, were the big kind of, like, oh, you can watch...
The normalization.
The normalization of, like, what was, like, really geeky culture when I was, like... when I was in high school, you didn't tell people that you were, like, reading the X-Men or reading, like, you know... Iron Man or anything like that, you would have been like given a swirly or like taken out behind the bleachers after school. We were all reading it. We were all reading that shit and like, you know, and only talking about it to our closest friends, like, you know, Watchmen or Ronin or like, you know, The Dark Knight Returns or whatever. But now it's like mainstream culture. Grown-ups are going to it. They're not taking their kids. You know, it's like their thing,
it's
right?
Date night. We're gonna leave the kids at home and go see Avengers Endgame.
And that's what I mean by it's the Marvel Cinematic Universe is the Train Man of the West, because it's like Train Man was the moment where nerds realized, oh well, you know, maybe I'm not like the social outcast I thought I was, or like normal people could kind of incorporate otaku type stuff into their average. Oh yeah, I read manga. You know. Because I think that's around the time, like, when I first, like, graduated from college and like, would go to Japanese offices, you didn't see, like, a lot of action figures and shit sitting around people's desks. And, like, post like, you know, Train Man, now you go into, like, I mean, I'm biased because I'm mainly, like, working with game companies and, like, publishers and stuff like that. Like, people's desks are encrusted with, like, gashapon and, like, you know, figures and toys and, like, plush things or whatever. And it's, like, I often think if, like, some Showa-era salaryman time traveled to now, they'd be like, what the hell is going on here, you know?
Every now and then, you know, my female partner in crime, Jay, will turn to me and go, you know, normal Japanese people don't like this shit. I know you think, exactly. I know you think everyone here likes anime and manga because you do, but they don't fucking actually really like that.
Yeah, Hiroko's the same way, right? You know, because I was like, what? Everyone's not watching Yamato?
Okay, but then I will go pick up my daughter at fucking daycare and, like, one of the dads will have, like, a Zetton Ultra Kaiju t-shirt.
Right.
And I'll be like, oh, you like Ultraman, oh, that's Zetton, yeah, that's who's your favorite kaiju, and like we will break the ice over
no way
some
dude you go up
fucking
to him and you're like, you just studied this, isn't that what you just say when you see somebody wearing a Uniqlo Ultraman shirt?
We gotta tell that story because that to me is like one of my favorite all-time memories.
That's gotta be 10 or 15 years ago.
That was like
now.
15 years ago. We were in Yoyogi at the Robot Maid Bar. I forget
what
it was
it's
called.
Not, I almost said Robot Restaurant, but it's not the Robot Restaurant. It was like an izakaya run by this, like, you know, guy who's super into, you know, anime and robots and stuff. Yeah, robot.
Mecha anime.
I think you're right. It was called Robot Maid Cafe or something.
It had a stupid name, but that's the theme was they had maids who were robots. They were just girls who had, they were like lobotomized girls in maid
costumes. I remember,
like,
we went in and the guy recognized us because we were doing that column for Figure O, the USA Otakers.
And we're like, we think it's on the house for the stars.
Exactly. I was like, make it rain, you know? Anyway, we get in there. And then we were watching, like, he just had on TV, like, a bunch of, you know. It was showing, like, a bunch of intros, I think. I don't think it was showing the actual. Was it showing the actual show? Whatever the case was, you and I started talking about it. And there was another guy in there who, like, another customer was like, wow, these foreigners, you know,
these foreigners know are so cool.
These foreigners really know a lot about, you know, obscure Japanese anime robot shows. And the proprietor said something like, oh, well, they just studied it. You know, like we didn't live this shit. Like, it wasn't lived experience like he had lived it. And I think you were more taken aback by this than I was. I just thought it was funny. And truth be told, I did study Dragon R. I didn't watch it in real time.
It's like when an actual Green Beret, like, watches, like, John Wayne in the Green Berets.
Well, I mean, what is living it versus studying it? You know what I mean? It was, and I don't, like, necessarily know that he meant it as some kind of, like, grand diss, but it was, like, get out of here! You only studied this, you know? You didn't live through Dragon R like I did. Too soon, man. It wasn't like that, but it was instructive, you know what I mean? Because, like everybody else, Otaku were always trying to put, you know, draw lines between themselves and other people and, like, even other otaku, like, who's the realest of them all? You know, the answer to that is, of course, Toshio Okada, because he made Otaku no Video. I ran into him at the 7-Eleven in my neighborhood the other day.
Was he like looking at the porno mags before they take him off the shelves
for
the Olympics?
I was behind him in line and like, you know, he had a second wind around the time of Train Man when he wrote this book called Don't Think You Have to Be Fat Forever. Yeah, it was an otaku weight loss book, and he must have lost like 100 pounds or something like that. He was looking really good, but I hate to say this, he was kind of back to normal and was
There he is at the Combini eating fried chicken. So.
Exactly. I was like, oh man, and I didn't, you know, he's not really.
He pretended not to know who he was and sort of averted your eyes.
Well, you know, it's like, it's not like he's like Brad Pitt or something where he's being besieged by people. You kind of have to know who he is. No, like, this is the thing, right? Like, I'm usually really, like, kind of proactive about, like, you know, if I see, you know, Umezu Kazuo on the street, or, like, once, you know, I was seated next to Katsuhiro Otomo at a bar. I was like, hey, man, I love your shit. You know, and there's varying degrees of the way people will react. Like, you know, Umezu Kazuo was like, oh, that's cool, wow. You know, and, you know, Otomo was
it's
like,
always a gamble.
Otomo
you never know
like,
how awkward it's
going to
be.
Yeah, and, like, I don't know, like, I never felt like Okada was really particularly approachable. I don't know. I don't know what to put. He's just, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm too starstruck.
I think, like, yeah, just kind of jamming on someone at the Combini is probably a little.
Well, it's also like, this is his neighborhood too. So I don't want to be just like, you know, stalking somebody, you know? It's not
neighborhood
like a random
alert goes off.
He's fallen and he can't get up. But yeah.
That might happen, though.
Yeah, well, this is it. We're all aging. The next wave is going to be what happens when otaku get elderly. The otaku who survive that kind of like 50 to 60 year old time frame where like Osamu Tezuka and like, you know, Ishinomori Shotaro passed away like all too young. Like for those, we live in an aging society. So what happens when you have like when otaku need elder care?
Well, dude, there's like those canes. There's like those Big Daddy walking canes. It's like Getorobo, Mazinger Z. And these are like the hot new toys for like that they're rolling out for Christmas.
Seriously, like you know, it's going to be only a matter of time for those like, you know, Pokemon themed adult diapers or like, you know, denture creams and things like that. You know, it has to happen.
There's too much money on the table. Yeah, it's like an $18 billion market now.
Well, this is another place where Japan's ahead of the curve because it's so aging. It's like literally, seriously, are we going to have like, you know, those memory care facilities where like, you know, they put like kind of Alzheimer's patients in like a kind of a simulacrum of the 60s or something like that so they feel more comfortable. I can totally see like somebody like, you know, in the future, like Japanese otaku elderly being like Shocker's base or like, you know, the Ultraman base, you know what I mean? The photonic energy. The Photonic Energy Research Institute.
Is this going to be like me in like a 2XL and like some comic books from 7-Eleven?
Are you going to have like, these moments of clarity where I'm not really in the Ultraman base? Where am I? You know, it's going to be like the Matrix. Yeah, so that's where we're heading, man. Elder care
death,
for otaku.
The grave is basically where we're headed. Exactly. Okay, that's good to know.
The end, the heat death of the universe. sometimes it feels that way in the middle of corona insanity.
I mean, it could be worse. We could be in America.
Well, you know, this is actually the big thing. You know, so what's his name? Hiroki Azuma. So he recently wrote this essay about what he calls corona ideology, and he's talking about how, like, basically otaku culture prepared us for this moment because, you know, we're all sitting in front of screens exchanging information instead of, like, actually forging relationships in, like, the real world outside. And so, you know, without that kind of, you know, experience of having virtualized and you know, virtualized our identities, this probably would be a million times harder to get through.
Because everyone has a screen name, everyone has a webcam, everyone has the
everybody's a cam girl, and he concludes by saying, "Are we ever going to be able to go back?" Train man, he was the canary in the coal mine, Patrick, for late stage capitalism. He really
late
was.
Is that it? All comes back to late stage capitalism.
It is.
It's half the comments whenever someone posts about like
late capitalism. Capitalism. You know, meaning just now, right? That's what that means. Like it sounds like some kind of Star Trek, you know, comment. But what it basically means is now, the present day, I think. And that's where we're at. So see you at the heat death of the universe.